Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
We're going to take a trip away from Disney this week, even though we've been doing Disney the last however many weeks, Robert. Just a short trip down Interstate 4 in either direction. Let's start going a little south to Haines City, getting off at US 27 and going to towards Winter Garden, Winter Haven, excuse me, and Cypress Gardens, which is now Legoland, which now the Legoland is on the complex, but Cypress Gardens was one of the first Central Florida amusement parks. I think we think of Silver Springs rightly as the first big tourist attraction in Florida. And Silver Springs is still a very big tourist attraction. I was at Silver Springs. I'm there often in Ocala. I was at Silver Springs maybe about a year and a half ago during a holiday weekend, and the place was mobbed. It felt like Disney. But Cypress Gardens, very unique Florida southern attraction.
Yeah, it's one of those places that definitely, which you could say probably all of the ones that we're going to be talking about, they're not sort of after the international or really, frankly, national appeal that a Disney and eventually a Universal tried to cultivate. They're very regionalized. And particularly in the early parts of their existence, they definitely liked to embrace the old Florida, old South aspects of this region very, very much. That was something that was very distinctly felt. But ultimately, and this is the thing, and one of the reasons why I think we're coupling all of these different parks together is because they seem to represent the pre-Disney and the post-Disney. And we've talked about it on the show a lot, but there was a number of different tourist attractions that were around before Disney. And, I don't know about you, I'm sure you've encountered this, but, you know, there's been a number of people, particularly while I was doing Rum Runners, that would talk about how they would travel with their grandparents or their parents in RVs or things of that nature, and they would sort of coast along Florida, and they would experience these different amusement parks that are now gone and abandoned. And this park in particular is one of those that was able to sort of weather the storm and really grow and redevelop its sort of its narrative from sort of an old South to one that is more a celebration of Florida and really a local conservational force and a real celebration for the natural beauty and the natural landscape of the area. And so it's really almost an anti-Disney in a way. If you kind of want to get away from the crowds, if you really want to have a nice, calm, peaceful experience and really just, go and be one with nature and do a lot of wonderful activities with the family, it's a great place to do that. And so it really has become one of these great pre-Disney landmarks and frankly time capsules.
Yeah, so nearby in Haines City, right at where US 27 and I-4 meet, which is now dominated by Wawa, and I've been at that interchange a lot in recent years, where there's a Wawa and there's a huge Walmart supercenter. But once upon a time, there was a place called Circus World, which we've talked about in a previous episode, was a kind of a circus-themed attraction, and had a following from when it opened in 73 or 74 until the opening of Epcot Center in 82. Now, when what happened with Epcot Center is that a lot of people who had gone, who were tourists who were coming to Central Florida for several days previously would would spend a day or two at the Magic Kingdom and then hit another attraction. And oftentimes that was Circus World. And once Epcot opened, there was no need to leave the Disney premises for attractions, even if you were staying. And most people in those days stayed off the Disney premises. You stayed on 192 or something. So Circus World developed a real problem and fell into a bad financial place. In 1986, Harcourt Brace Dravanovich, which is a textbook manufacturer, right, makes school textbooks, bought the attraction. They also bought SeaWorld at the same time. We're going to get to SeaWorld in a minute, because that's obviously maybe a more important part of the amusement park story in Florida. But when HBJ bought SeaWorld, and they bought Circus World, and they bought Cypress Gardens also, which we just talked about, they shut down Circus World and replaced it with an attraction called Boardwalk in Baseball, which was anchored by a town called Baseball City. And that had a three-year run, which was a... I mean, I guess if there are people who are baseball fans who... I'm not a baseball fan, but people who are baseball fans tell me it was this wonderful amusement park. But he drew over a million people in terms of attendance its first couple years. And they had a live MLB game or something that was broadcast nationally. And in those days, getting time on network TV, it's not like today, right, where everything's on television. So that was big. But then eventually it became a it became very, very difficult to keep the park open, and was closed, I believe, in 2002 or 2003. There was I think it was the Kansas City Royals trained at the stadium at Baseball City, and then they eventually moved. And that's now, like I said, there's a Walmart Supercenter there. There's a Wawa. There's some other stores there. US 27 is unrecognizable today from what it was like then. So there used to be orange groves around there then, believe it or not, if you live in that area now. So let's get to SeaWorld. HBJ by SeaWorld in 1986. SeaWorld had opened in the 1970s, kind of to take advantage of the Disney boom, right? SeaWorld was, I think, for a while, the other big attraction in Central Florida outside of Disney. It opened in 1973 and was a fairly popular attraction. In fact, in 1976, as I mentioned, Harcourt Brace Dravanovich bought it, and then they bought those other parks in 86, so I wasn't clear on that. They bought Cypress Gardens and Circus World in 86. What we saw with SeaWorld was it had... And in those days, these kind of sea parks, the first one had been in Florida, actually, Marineland, which is in Flagler County, had opened in 1938. These kind of sea show parks before the days of Free Willy and the other controversies related to animal welfare and the treatment of animals at these parks. These parks were very, very popular, I think the popularity of SeaWorld really took off when Jaws 3 was filmed in the park. And there was a period of time, I remember being in school, where because one of the sequels to the Jaws franchise, which was actually Steven Spielberg, Jaws 1 was Steven Spielberg's first big blockbuster hit in 1975, with Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw and all the other stars of that movie. The Jaws franchise, I think, was probably second in that era behind the Star Wars franchise. Maybe Indiana Jones was second, but I think it was on that level. And having a movie filmed, and this is when we still film movies in Florida, which is a big theme of this season, having that movie filmed almost entirely in Orlando really drove up interest in SeaWorld.
And, you know, SeaWorld was... SeaWorld was formed by a few friends from UCLA. And I think the main focus originally was to sort of find their niche in the sort of kind of marine lab slash, you know, ocean exploration boom that was going on in this state during the 60s and 70s. There's a marine lab near me still, and there's one large one in Miami, but there were a lot of them springing all over. And so one of the things that really saved SeaWorld was the fact that they didn't kind of fall into the Six Flags trap, so to speak, where they were trying to not only keep up but surpass development over Disney. So they weren't trying to compete with Disney over immersion and theming and big rides. It was the animals, the sea. These very small concepts were what it was all about. And, you know, I mean, it was sort of, you know, a little piece of the Atlantic Ocean coast in Central Florida. And so, you know, it was a way for people to, you know, my God, see killer whales, you know, all of these really impressive things, you know, dolphins, you know, performing and all of these things that were very big at the time. One quick thing that I would be remiss if I didn't mention, my granddad was one of those people that would travel up 27, and every single time we would pass Baseball City, he would mention, you know, that he knew the mayor of Baseball City, who was a friend of his, and he was always lobbying the legislature to try and make Baseball City sort of like the Cooperstown of the South.
Hmm.
And one of the interesting things about Baseball City is the fact that it sort of signifies Florida's constant desire to be a major location of baseball nationally. Florida has always wanted to have, you know, a statewide team. And then when they had a statewide team, you know, there were those great expensive, you know, Super Bowl series where, you know, basically they spent, you know, mortgaged themselves to the hilt to get these players just, you know, so they could get a Super Bowl. I mean, excuse me, not a Super Bowl, a World Series pennant and then, you know, to actually win it. So Florida has a great thirst for baseball. Not as much now as it did back then, but that was another aspect where they were trying to kind of get into the Florida zeitgeist of the time. And for whatever reason, maybe it was just had to do with, you know, the fact that it's dealing with animals. That was one of the things that allowed SeaWorld to flourish. And then when you had this publisher who, you know, the only thing that's more odd about the fact that SeaWorld was basically formed by a couple of college friends is the fact that it was then taken over by a really almost ancient publisher of therapy and self-help books. So, you know, it's a very colorful and interesting, you know, dynamic, but it also represents a move in the 1980s of these ancient companies that got into business and were very profitable in these industries that, you know, sort of died out, and they began to make the move into another avenue of business. You know, famously, this was around the same time that Nintendo, which was got its start as a noodle company, started going into telecommunication, and, you know, Nintendo and all of these different video games. And so, again, you have a situation where Florida was sort of taking aspects of various bits of American life and was right at the forefront of a gradual shift in industry for a lot of these older companies.
So one milestone at SeaWorld was the first birth of a orca, or surviving birth of an orca born in captivity in September of 1985. Baby Shamu was born. I remember it was such a big event in the state. We heard about it for days and days and days, and it was a source of a lot of pride. This is, again, before Free Willy, and before, more significantly, I think, for SeaWorld and for the show business, you know, the CNN documentary Blackfish, which really did a number, I think, on SeaWorld in particular, but also on other marine attractions like this. The Miami Seaquarium, as we record this, is very much in limbo as to whether that will stay around. And they had an orca that died in August, an orca that was named Lolita, that we all knew about growing up in South Florida, and had been captured in Puget Sound, off, you know, Seattle, that area, in the 1960s, and had lived its entire life in captivity. So, you know, I don't want to, as we talk about SeaWorld, I don't want the listeners to get the impression that we're glossing over these controversies, these very real animal welfare controversies, which I think have sunk the park's popularity. And in fact, I'll leave us on this note. SeaWorld Orlando was in the top 10 in terms of amusement park attendances for any amusement park in the world up until the Blackfish film. Now it sits outside the top 30. It's not even really a relevant attraction in Central Florida, let alone globally. Before that, it was a top 10 attraction globally, in terms of amusement parks, or, you know, these sorts of show type parks. Even though the original SeaWorld, of course, is in California, this had become kind of the anchor of the SeaWorld chain. So that is a very real reality. Anyway, Robert, we're going to be back next week to talk about Universal. And we spent a podcast a few weeks ago talking about the debacle around the opening of Disney MGM Studios. Well, coinciding with that, Disney got some serious, serious competition from a rival company, a rival in the film business. And I'm sure everyone's going to want to tune in next week.